Ready to find your next favorite podcast? Start here.
I would wear the fake wedding ring sometimes.
You would wear a fake wedding ring?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, or a fake engagement ring. It helps to kind of, you know, wear jewelry and look like you have money.
That's
versus,
interesting.
Yeah, that was the hardest thing for me, was dressing and acting like I had this money to gamble with when I was actually just a student.
We asked Amy Poehler to be in the last episode of the web series.
Yeah.
And she was like such a delight.
Yeah.
We shot with her for an hour.
That's what she is. Yeah.
We're all the same height. We were like, let's round them, literally running around the West Village with her.
Is your non-discrimination policy comprehensive and trans inclusive? Has your HR department and your management been trained in trans competency? Is it easy for a trans person to figure out how to change their name in your system?
On the way, samples from This Is Uncomfortable, The Three Questions with Andy Richter, and Queersplaining. Welcome to Start Here from Cincinnati Public Radio. I'm Trip Eldridge, your podcast jockey. Each week, we sample and highlight three podcasts to help you navigate the exploding podcast world and maybe find your next podcast obsession. Plus, get an email summary of each podcast we feature with our weekly Start Here email blast. Just go to wvxu.org/subscribe and select the Start Here blast email at the bottom of the page. And if you like what you hear, please rate us in Apple Podcasts. A 5-star rating will help others find us in the iTunes gallery. With special thanks to Cincinnati Public Radio's Jim Nolan and Kevin Reynolds, and curation, writing, and producing from Connor Eldridge, let's start here. Let's face it, talking about money is uncomfortable. How much you save, how much you spend, where it goes, it's a touchy subject. Money means a lot of things in your life, so why not get more acquainted with it? You could do just that with the help of this week's first podcast, This Is Uncomfortable, from Marketplace. This Is Uncomfortable is a show about life and how money messes with it. Join host Rima Karas each week. She digs into stories about the unanticipated ways money affects relationships, shapes identities, and often defines what it means to be an adult. With real-life stories, fun interviews, and guests from all types of backgrounds and careers, This Is Uncomfortable brings you fresh perspectives on the power money has over our lives. There will be tension, there will be humor, and it will always be just a little uncomfortable. Here's a sample from the episode of This Is Uncomfortable titled Lost in the Game. The episode follows the high-stakes life of Rose Travis, a professional blackjack card counter. In this clip, Travis takes us through the underground world of card counting, detailing how her involvement went from risky side hustle to full-blown profession.
A lot of card counters roll in teams with defined jobs. Rose, she was the spotter, someone who sits at the blackjack table carefully counting the cards until the odds are tilted in their favor. When that happens, the spotter then gives a signal to the big player, who shows up and starts placing big bets. It's a well-orchestrated scheme.
Almost like this cloak and dagger, like you feel like you're a spy.
Mm-hmm.
We kind of saw ourselves as these, you know, renegades, like the casinos owe us this. You know, they're taking money from people every day, all day. And,
we're gonna take it back.
Yeah, like someone's got to take it back. Someone has to try.
So card counting is not illegal. But if casinos catch you, you can get what's called 86'd. They'll kick you out. And if you come back, it's considered trespassing. You can get fined or spend a night in jail. Sometimes people's names and pictures also get shared with nearby casinos, making it harder for them to play. When Rose and her team would walk into the casino, usually 4 or 5 at a time, they'd come in from different entrances, take seats at different tables, and start playing. To communicate, they'd use signals.
So if I was smoking a cigarette with a certain hand, then that would be a signal. And so ours were very subtle. Sometimes it was just holding a drink in your hand or, you know, crossing your arms.
Also, I confirmed, like the movies, she'd wear fake disguises, including regularly dyeing her hair. And if anyone talked with her, she'd often give them a fake persona.
I would sometimes say, like, oh, you know, I just sold a screenplay. And, you know, because I always wanted to be a writer, I would say, you know, oh, I just wrote a book. And, you know, so I'd project, you know, my sort of
future ambitions,
future fantasy lives onto what I was doing.
And she'd often dress the part, too.
I would wear the fake wedding ring sometimes.
You would wear a fake wedding ring?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, or a fake engagement ring. It helps to kind of, you know, wear jewelry and look like you have money.
That's
versus,
interesting.
Yeah, that was the hardest thing for me, was dressing and acting like I I had this money to gamble with when I was actually just a student that that shopped at thrift stores.
She was just an English student with a lot of debt and a couple $1,000s in her bank account. Rose grew up in a lower middle class family. Her parents were both teachers. And as an adult, money was always tight.
I felt a little bit out of place. Not that I was lying to people. I never really mentioned, you know, I didn't really mention I'm living on loans. I really need money, because that's not really something you want to talk about when you're gambling and there's all this cash laying around. You know, there's a level of trust that's very important.
Each weekend, the team went out. They'd pool their money together, anywhere from $50,000 to $300,000. And according to how much each person put in, they'd split the winnings. Rose never put in a lot. After a long weekend, she'd make anything from nothing to a few $1,000s. But on average, it was enough to start thinking about her winnings as a salary. It was her job. She hoped that by counting cards, she wouldn't have to rely on her student loans so much. That maybe she wouldn't have to decide between fixing her car's AC during a hot Arizona summer or paying her credit card bill.
A sample from This Is Uncomfortable from Marketplace. Tune into The Uncomfortable every Thursday for more stories of money management, financial faux pas, and the length people are forced to go to make a buck. New to our Podcast Central collection this week is another new Earwolf podcast brought to you by a comedy icon. Just as Conan O'Brien is looking for a friend, his comedic partner and late-night sidekick Andy Richter is looking for some friends of his own on his new podcast, The Three Questions with Andy Richter. The format is just about as simple as a podcast format can get. Each week, Andy asks the same three questions to his guests. Where are you from? Where are you going? And what have you learned? These three questions, according to Andy, give you a pretty complete picture of who a person is. But don't worry, it's not just a one-sided conversation. Andy doesn't shy away from getting personal himself as he learns more about some of his favorite personalities in showbiz. Here's a sample for you from the first episode of The Three Questions with Andy Richter, featuring comedian and performer Abby Jacobson. Abby joins the show to talk about her Philadelphia upbringing, her experiences creating, running, and acting in her hit show Broad City, and what her career post-Broad City might entail.
We asked Amy Poehler to be in the last episode of the web series.
Yeah.
And she was like such a delight.
Yeah.
We shot with her for an hour.
That's what she is, yeah.
We're all the same height. We were like, let's round them, literally running around the West Village with her. And we did the same thing that you were saying you did in college. We're like, UCB, all these people want to direct.
Mm-hmm.
And so 35 episodes, we had like 15 different directors.
Yeah.
We had so many actors from the community come in. And
how did you pay for it? I'm just the nuts and bolts things are interesting to
me. It was such a cheat. Like, we would pay the directors $100.
Yeah.
And we would bring bagels.
Yeah.
And I would like, there was like a weird hot dog shop. I lived in Astoria and I was like, hey, can we shoot in here after you close for $50? And they were like, sure. So it was like so – like
yeah,
we
yeah.
would steal – we would go into the subway and like steal it.
Yeah.
Because we were shooting on the Canon SLR. Uh-huh. So it was like
– And did you rent that? Did somebody buy
most
it?
Most of the directors
already had,
it.
Yeah.
It was sort of like, do you have the thing? We need someone that has equipment.
Right, right,
and
right.
And then it was like
then
giving
Then you can
them.
Direct.
It was. It was like – truly, it was like people that did it ended up like – one of them was Dan Opsahl, who was Fallon's director forever.
Wow. Yeah, yeah.
Paul Briganti, who was SNL's director now forever.
Yeah.
And like all of these people that ended up like doing that.
Yeah.
And which is so cool now. And so when the director of that last one, TJ Misney, sent us back the finale, which we had spent more money on that Amy was in, we sent it to her and we were like, this is crazy. But like, we're going to LA. We're going to try and pitch this for TV. Like, would you ever want to EP it with us? And then she was like, I would love to. And we were like, wah! Like, that was almost a bigger moment than when the show
Somebody
sold.
The show, yeah.
Because it was like Amy Poehler, like, it just was such a validation.
Sure.
She owns the theater that we can't get on a team. And now she's going to wants to like go and pitch it with us.
Yeah, yeah.
It was huge.
Well,
and that
also
was like 2011.
You know, Amy Poehler has exquisite taste. Whereas the people that will buy your show, you can look on the same network and look at some of the things that they bought that don't exhibit exquisite taste.
No.
So
they
like
don't.
When Amy says, yes, I want to do this with you, it means you've got something you know, fairly special, you know?
Yeah, it was, that was a really huge moment. And then we went out, we came out here in 2011.
Yeah.
And then we were like, just as we had planned, but now Amy was with us. And we're in all these meetings with Amy. And like, we had cut this reel together and all this stuff. And then we developed, FX bought it.
Yeah.
We developed there for a year. And then they passed on it. And then we brought it to Comedy Central and they got it.
Yeah.
They like got it and let us run with it.
Yeah.
A snippet of the three questions with Andy Richter from Earwolf. You can check out all of Andy's latest interviews right now on The Three Questions, now available on WVXU's Podcast Central. This week's local feature is called Queersplaining, hosted by local podcaster Callie Wright. Queersplaining is a storytelling podcast centered around stories from the LGBTQ community. Each week, Callie welcomes guests or recounts her own experiences as she curates thoughtful conversations on love, sexuality, and gender expression in a world that's still very much in need of them. Take a listen to this clip from the recent episode of Queersplaining. The episode's called Callie is in a Complicated Relationship with Pride. In it, Callie explains her problems with the expansion and corporatization of Pride Month and the hypocrisy that often accompanies businesses' involvement in Pride celebrations.
Not too long after, I went to a meeting of queer and trans activists from all around Ohio. One of the predominant topics of discussion was whether or not we push for gender identity protections in non-discrimination laws, or should we push for sexual orientation only and go after gender identity later as a separate issue. Putting gender identity in those laws makes them harder to pass, after all. Incremental change is better than no change, right? Trans people, again, just make shit more complicated for the queer community. Now, I want to be clear, there was no one in this room that felt good about that fact. It's just an objective reality that trans people make the conversation more complicated, and it fucking sucks to feel like a burden on my own community. Pride the next year just felt different. I was pretty well fully aware of how messy the community was at this point, and it had made me cynical. We went anyways. It was the first year I was with Celeste, and I wanted to march with my girlfriend, so we did. And I made the brilliant decision to march in the parade with shitty $5 sandals from Old Navy, which meant that my feet were near falling off when the parade was over with. Celeste and some friends had to physically help me to the car. My feet were in so much pain, so not much time for a party that year. I was so sour that I didn't go to Pride at all the next 2 years. It just didn't feel like a place for me. I wasn't really in the mood for that kind of party. I was so disillusioned with certain members of our local community that I really had no desire to run into them because I was sure as fuck not interested in pretending like we were still friends. And so this year, a few weeks before June, the perennial conversations begin. Who belongs at Pride? Cops, corporations, cishet folks, and honestly, I'm pretty firmly with the idea that there shouldn't be uniformed cops marching in any parade or taking part in any of the actual festivities. But aside from that, this is a situation where I can see and agree with almost all sides of the argument simultaneously. You know, I wish there could be some sort of questionnaire distributed to the corporations that want to take part. Is your health insurance trans-inclusive? Is your non-discrimination policy comprehensive and trans-inclusive? Has your HR department and your management been trained in trans competency? Is it easy for a trans person to figure out how to change their name in your system? Has your company donated tons of money to anti-queer politicians? If the answers to those questions are wrong, take your rainbow logo and get the fuck out of my party. If you have the right answers, though, cool. Get afloat together. Let your queer and trans employees feel seen and loved and appreciated. I know those experiences can be super meaningful to people who work for those companies. I'm skeptical of corporations and I'm pretty anti-capitalist, but I also won't ignore the trans folks who've told me those things make them feel seen, loved, and appreciated and safe in the spaces they work in. And that's important, too.
The local podcast, Queersplaining with Callie Wright. You can hear more about the important discussions on LGBTQ topics every week on Queersplaining, available on WVXU's Podcast Central. Time to see what podcasts are sweeping the nation now on the Apple Podcast Charts via iTunescharts.net. Well, two new podcasts have launched and skyrocketed up the charts this month. The first, The Clearing, tells the story of when April Bellazio was 40 years old, something she'd feared for decades was finally proven true. Her father, Edward Wayne Edwards, really was a murderer. The clearing is about what came after April called a detective in 2009 to tell him about her suspicions, a call that led to her father's arrest and eventual conviction on multiple murders. The other new podcast that hit number one this month is very much a feature of the news. It's about the Mueller report, and the podcast is called The Report. Only journalism site Lawfare distills the Mueller report into a multi-part audio narrative series, telling you the story of what's in the document, the story that Robert Mueller wants you to understand. That's The Report and The Clearing, both number one on the Apple Podcast charts. To learn more, check out the Start Here email. Just go to wvxu.org/subscribe and choose the Start Here newsletter from the bottom of the page. Thank you for joining us for Start Here, Cincinnati Public Radio's Discovery Podcast. For more information about podcasts we like, check out Podcast Central at wvxu.org. And remember, if you've got a podcast or an episode you'd like to recommend, email us at podcast@wvxu.org or call us at 513-294-8030, and we'll add your voice to ours. For now, I'm Trip Eldridge for Cincinnati Public Radio, and thank you for choosing to start here.